Well, good morning, everybody. It is Wednesday, January 12th, 2022, and the time is 10:30 a.m. This is the public rulemaking meeting for Washington Administrative Code, WAC 458-20-145, titled Local Sales and Use Tax. My name is Brent Madison, and I am a tax policy specialist with the Interpretations and Technical Advice Division, and I am the facilitator for this meeting. Also in attendance from the Department of Revenue are Atif Aziz in his role as the Department's Rules Coordinator, Keith Dacus, Management Analyst, who will be monitoring our recording equipment as this meeting is being recorded, Tina Poli, Tax Policy Coordinator, Patrick Watkins, Tax Policy Specialist. And today's meeting is being conducted telephonically through Microsoft Teams. For purposes of the record, there are not other parties physically present for this meeting. And at this time, for purposes of the record, we would appreciate it if attendees would identify themselves, who they are representing, and a statement as to whether or not they will be testifying. So, Keith, could I ask that, because there are a number of attendees, could I ask that you could just go through the list and just ask each attendee to introduce themselves, who they're representing, and whether they intend to testify.
Yeah, so I'll go down the list. Clifford Webster, I think I already got you with the Northwest Marine Trade Association, is that right?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, and I'll be admitting people as I'm going, so there might be a slight delay. Sorry, go ahead.
Clifford, will you? Do you intend to testify at today's meeting?
Yes, I will. And I go by Cliff, but you can call me Clifford.
Oh, perfect. Sorry.
Thank you, Cliff.
All right. I've got a Craig Ware.
Craig, if you're in attendance, it'd be great for purpose of the record if you could let us know who you're representing and whether you intend to testify.
Hi, my name is Craig. I work for a private company called PCC Community Markets. I'm kind of new to a staff accounting role. I started getting these emails about, you know, different rule proposals and stuff like that. I thought this one might apply to knowledge I might need for my company, so I decided to join in this meeting. I do not intend to testify.
Thank you.
All right, next we got Don, forgive me if I pronounce this wrong, Gagan.
Hi, yes, Don Gagan from Microsoft, and I do not plan to testify today.
Okay. Next is Deanne DeSanto.
Yes, I'm also from Microsoft and don't plan to testify.
Okay, and then I've got a first name of Denny, but no last name.
Denny Wong here. I'm an attorney. I do not plan to testify.
Okay, next is Scott Edwards.
Yes, Scott Edwards with Lane Powell. I do not intend to testify.
Okay, next is Fred Robinson.
Oh, and Fred, you are muted.
Okay. Fred Robinson. I'm with the Robinson Law Firm. I practiced yacht law for over close to 35 years. I'm not representing any particular party, but I do wish to testify.
Thank you, Fred.
All right. Next is Jay Jennings.
Jay Jennings, if you would like to identify yourself and who you're representing and whether you intend to testify for purpose of the record, that would be great.
This is Jay Jennings with Northwest Marine Trade Association, and Cliff Webster is going to handle our testimony today. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, next is Kara Myers.
Hi, I am with Columbia Valley Community Health, and I'm just popping on here to listen to what's going on, get some more information.
Okay.
Thank you.
Next we have a first name of K, but no last name.
K. Mendelson from Swift Comply, and I do not intend to testify.
Thank you, K.
Next is Kevin Miller.
Kevin Miller representing myself. I will testify.
Thank you, Mr. Miller.
All right. And next is, forgive me if I say it wrong, Marija Anderson.
It's Maria Anderson. I just saw your email, and that has to do with the use tax, and I just wanted to know what's going on.
Thank you, Maria.
Okay. Next is Mitch Bailey.
This is Mitch Bailey with Moss Adams. I do not intend to testify.
Thank you, Mitch.
All right. Next is Monique Weber.
Monique, for purpose of the record, if you could identify yourself, who you're representing, and whether you intend to testify, that would be great.
Sorry, I had to step away for one. My name is Monique Weber. I work for Pacific Yacht Management and Maintenance. At this point, I do not plan to testify.
Thank you, Monique.
All right, next is Nicole McClintock.
I'm Nicole McClintock. I'm at Lurks and Gross, and I do not plan to testify.
Thank you, Nicole.
All right. Next is Ashley Rivera.
Hey, I'm also joined by phone. I am with Reed Smith, and I will not be testifying.
Thank you, Ashley.
All right. And next is April Thompson.
I'm with Cambia Health Solutions, and I do not plan on testifying.
Thank you, April.
And this should be last. I've had people coming in as I go. Actually, there's one more after this. Tommy Gantz.
Hi, I'm Tommy Gantz with the Association of Washington Business, and I'm here for informational purposes only and do not plan on testifying today.
Thank you, Tommy.
And last, I've got a phone number with no name. It's 253-732-9406.
Hey, that's me, Ashley Rivera.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Thanks, Ashley. And for purpose of the record, was there anybody who did not have an opportunity to introduce themselves? If so, I'll go ahead and pause for a moment and give you an opportunity to do so.
I didn't. This is Tamara Jett with Turner Construction, and I do not plan to testify.
Thank you, Tamara.
And I believe that's all we had, Brent.
Okay. So the legal authority for this meeting is from Chapter 34.05 RCW, which is the Administrative Procedures Act. This meeting was announced through publication in the Washington State Register as WSR21-24-074 on November 30th, 2021, and by notification to interested persons. The purpose of this meeting is to solicit comments from the public prior to taking actions to adopt proposed amendments to WAC 458-20-145, which we refer to in this meeting as Rule 145. Electronic copies of this rule are available if you did not receive a copy. Please email Keith Dacus at keithd@dor.wa.gov if you'd like to receive a copy of Rule 145 with the proposed amendments. We emphasize that the rule draft as now written is provided for discussion purposes only. The rule as proposed is written in the legislative drafting style. Proposed new language is underlined, and proposed deletions to the language are stricken through. We will consider any comments received pertaining to possible adoption of Rule 145 as amended. We appreciate receiving written comments and will evaluate all comments as we proceed with the rulemaking process. You may send written comments to my attention no later than Monday, January 31st, 2022. My email address is brentonm@dor.wa.gov. Comments may also be submitted to Patrick Watkins, and his email is patrickw@dor.wa.gov, and it is also identified in the Form CR-101 filing that is currently published on the Department of Revenue's rulemaking page on our website. In this manner, the department can fully consider your comments before proceeding with future rulemaking activities. At this time, I will briefly outline the rulemaking process and where we are with respect to this rule. The first step in the process is to file a notice with the code reviser to announce a public meeting for solicitation of comments regarding the possible changes to the rule. The notice, called a Form CR-101, is published in the State Register and announced through mailings to interested persons. The public meeting for the rule is today. The next step is to file a notice of proposed rulemaking with the code reviser to announce a public hearing on the proposed rule. And this notice, called a Form CR-102, is also published in the State Register and announced through mailings to interested persons. The purpose of the hearing is to receive further public comments regarding proposed changes to the rule. All public comments will be fully evaluated as we proceed in the rulemaking process, and any comments that we receive, we will include those in the permanent rulemaking file, which is kept by the Interpretations and Technical Advice Division within the Department of Revenue. The final step in the process is to adopt the revised rule. This is not a public process, but simply requires that we, the department, submit the final draft of the rules to the code reviser with the appropriate forms. The revised rule will be effective shortly thereafter and will be published in the Washington State Register. So before opening this public meeting for comments, I will briefly outline the key points in the proposed amendments to Rule 145, and I will also outline the department's plan for conducting rulemaking activities to related rules, which are not formally part of this rulemaking effort. So the proposed amendments incorporate the existing provisions for the sourcing of retail sales of tangible personal property, which are presently found in WAC 458-20-193, Part 2, and we'll refer to that rule in this meeting as Rule 193. The department anticipates proposing amendments to Rule 193, which will include removing Part 2 from that rule, as well as Part 1, in the very near future. The proposed amendments to Rule 145 incorporate new language and examples which clarify the department's existing and historical policies concerning local retail sales and use tax sourcing. The proposed amendments include several modifications related to the organization and format of the rule more generally, which are intended to improve the rule's readability and modernize the rule in a manner that is consistent with other rules within Chapter 458-20 WAC. The proposed amendments include modifications to existing rule language and examples throughout the rule, and the intention of the modifications to the language in the introduction of the examples is to clarify existing department policy. The department also proposes amending the title of the rule from local sales and use tax to state and local sales and use tax dash sourcing retail sales dash sourcing for use tax purposes. This proposed amendment is intended to more accurately describe the content of the rule in the light of the significant amendments which are being proposed as part of this rulemaking effort. And now I'll speak to the other anticipated rulemaking. So in addition to the current rulemaking effort for Rule 145, the department anticipates initiating rulemaking activities for the following related rules in the coming weeks. WAC 458-20-193, titled Interstate Sales of Tangible Personal Property. WAC 458-20-221, titled Collection of Use Tax by Retailers and Selling Agents. And WAC 458-20-19401, titled Minimum Nexus Thresholds for Apportionable Activities and Selling Activities. So that briefly describes the scope of what we're proposing in the amendments. At this time, we will proceed to the comment portion of the public meeting. If you have a comment, please identify yourself for purposes of the record, as well as the organization that you are representing. We also appreciate receiving any written testimony or comments. If you do have written testimony, you may send it by email as described previously to either Brenton M. at dor.wa.gov or to patrickw@dor.wa.gov. And in this way, we will include those written comments as part of the formal rulemaking file for Rule 145. So at this time, I know that there were a number of stakeholders who identified themselves as wanting to make public comments. Keith, I'm not sure whether you wrote down who
I did.
As we went. Oh, perfect. So I will ask at this time Tina Poli to go through so that everybody has an opportunity to comment on the proposed rulemaking activities.
So I believe we first had Cliff, who was going to speak. Go ahead, Cliff.
I think I have my microphone on.
Yes.
Confirm. Yeah, okay. So my name is Cliff Webster, and I represent the Northwest Marine Trade Association. The Northwest Marine Trade Association is, as the name indicates, a trade association of businesses from all parts of the recreational boating industry. So our members include marinas, boat retailers, boat manufacturers, boat yards, and so forth. We have about 700 members. And if you want to know who a big portion of our members are, if you've ever attended the Seattle Boat Show, here's a little promotion, which begins later this month I always call it Seahawks Stadium. You will see who our members are. So first of all, we object to the proposed changes to Rule 145, or as laid out in your Washington State Register 21.24.074. First of all, we think that the proposal is contrary to existing law and the express language in the statute. Existing law, in our view, states that local tax component or nexus is determined by place of first use, and as this proposed rule suggests, moving to permanent moorage, we think that's contrary to statutory law. We also would argue it's contrary to the department's long-standing administrative practice with respect to local sourcing of use tax for boats that are coming into the state for the first time. And I just might point out, by way of example about why we believe this is outside the scope of the statute, the department in 2021 had a bill it proposed to the legislature, and there was a provision to change this sourcing rule with respect to boats. It was in a part of a larger bill that largely, I think, would be considered technical and clarifying amendments to existing law. We objected to this, and the department took that provision out. We and others objected to it. The department took that provision out of the bill before it was further considered. And we believe at that time we made ample proof that this is contrary to the existing law and changes what has been both the law and the department's practice for many, many years. Second, I want to point out that in accordance with federal law, vessels entering Washington State, with some exceptions, when they're entering for foreign ports, are required to stop at the first or closest Customs and Border Patrol point of entry, which for larger boats are all ports in the North Puget Sound region. So the place of first use of the boat would be in those ports, in our view, and that changing them to other ports or other counties in the state is contrary to what federal law requires, and also contrary to what's been the department's practice. I think that covers everything that I wanted to say.
Excellent. Thank you, Clifford, or Cliff. And as a follow-up, do you intend to submit these comments that you've made in written form as well?
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. I think we can do it in about a page or so.
Okay, perfect. And the reason I say that is generally the department's approach will be to respond in earnest to the comments that you submit, and so that we can address the specific issues, concerns, or comments in general that you raise.
And may I confirm the deadline is January 21st for written comments?
Close of January 31st. Let me confirm on the form CR-101.
Okay. I have CR-101. I didn't.
Yes, January 31st.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Cliff. Next, we have Fred Robinson.
Yes, good morning. You can hear me?
Yes.
We can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, thank you for the opportunity to participate this morning in the hearing. My name is Fred Robinson. I'm the sole member of Robinson Law Firm, a Seattle-based law firm that does nothing but yacht-related work. I've been working in the yacht-related area of practice of law for about 35 years now. I come into it with a business and tax background and also having passed the CPA exam many years ago. So much of my focus is really focused on, specifically in the state tax area. I'm not going to get into all the technical reasons that I object to this, but rather some of the specific reasons that apply to the vote area. I do know that there was litigation, the tractor supply case that was handled by involving an airplane that came into the state. That was briefed in Thurston County Superior Court, and I'm sure there will be either verbal or written testimony given in this matter as to those changes. Many of the comments that will be in that will also apply to the boat industry, but I'll make some comments in addition to that. And I'm not representing any particular person at this time. I do deal exclusively with boat owners. The use tax law is clear. It's very clear here that, the statutes apply to using property within the state. The concept of using is the first act within the state by which taxpayer takes dominion or control. It's not the second act. It's not the third act. It's not the place of permanent mortgage. It is the first act by which a person takes or assumes dominion or control of a boat in the state of Washington. And under the sourcing rules that were brought in with the Streamlined Sales Tax Act, that's 8232, 730, and subpart 10 specifically applies to watercraft, it is sourced to the place of first use. As Mr. Webster just pointed out, in the case of boats that are coming into the state, where boats come in, and I presume the same also applies to aircraft, but where boats come into the state, and they're coming in from a foreign port, and in our situations with boats in this area, generally the foreign port would be ports in southern British Columbia. They are required by federal law to stop at the nearest port and to clear customs at that point. So the boats that are coming in here that this applies to, that this change applies to, by and large, the biggest impact in the industry is, number one, boats that are larger boats that are coming in from other areas in the United States directly without going into a foreign port, or larger boats that are coming into the United States via freighters that many times move from Port Everglades, Florida, where there's a very large yacht industry. They come through, they stop in a number of locations, including Ensenada, Mexico, and then they have to go up to British Columbia before the boats themselves can be offloaded and come into the state of Washington because of Jones Act restrictions on the freighters. So those boats be offloaded in British Columbia. And
no, go ahead.
Pardon?
Go ahead.
Okay. So any one of a number of ports in southern British Columbia, and then those boats will come into Puget Sound. They are larger boats, and because they're coming in from a foreign port, they're required by federal law to stop at the closest port, which, of course, would be in the northern part of Puget Sound. Some of the boats that are coming in from domestic locations may stop. They're not required to stop at the ports up north, but they may. They generally do, for one, because they want to get, they want to essentially rest the crew. They want to make sure that there aren't any mechanical or other issues with the boat before they proceed south. I just want to comment on the tractor supply case from the end of 2020. That That case, it involved an airplane that touched down briefly in Dallas-Port, Oregon, and I do firmly believe the decision was the case was wrongly decided. And the constitutional issues that were raised in that case, I'm not even sure that they apply here in many of these situations. The reason is that fundamentally with respect to the use taxation, whether it applies at the state level or the county level for the local use tax, there's no possibility of double taxation, taxation in another state or in a foreign jurisdiction for a sales or use tax, because if there is a tax paid in another jurisdiction by that owner on the same boat or airplane, there's a full credit given, so there is no double taxation. Now, why did the Department of Revenue raise those issues? I don't think, in my opinion, it's not because there's a deep belief that many of those constitutional issues or arguments, or perhaps any of them, even apply to the situation, but rather it's to create confusion. Confusion in front of the state Supreme Court, before the Thurston County Superior Court, because constitutional principles are very complicated in the taxation field, as they are in many instances. And so I think that that's why the constitutional issues were raised, not because there's a real belief that they apply. That's proper lawyering, but nonetheless, I believe that the constitutional issues are red herring. In the case of, let's see here, I want to point out that I have a situation. So back in roughly 1994, the law was changed, and the use tax law at that time said that that the use tax would apply in the state of Washington, and I'm paraphrasing here, when the transportation of the article came to rest in the state of Washington. It finally ended, I think, is some of the terminology. At that time, the Department of Revenue, wanting greater certainty with respect to aircraft and with respect to boats, and seeking to increase the tax revenue, the law was changed at that time to provide that rather than trying to determine when transportation finally ended, because in the case of mobile assets such as these, it's very difficult to say when has it finally ended. What is the point of, what are the factors of finally ended for something that's coming in and out of the state so much? The law was written as it is today to say specifically its first use, first act within the state with dominion and control. That happens the moment the plane or the boat enter the state of Washington. There's no language in there that talks about, you know, issues of transitoriness, you know, in the way the Department of Revenue has drafted this new proposed rule. It just does not apply. So, in that case, approximately 1996, 95 or 96, I was representing a taxpayer who had gotten an inquiry from the Department of Revenue. It was taxation on a boat. It was a 85-foot yacht that was built on the East Coast. This person was a Washington State resident. My belief is that he bought the boat individually. And he had the boat brought around with the term wet, not on a freighter, but just on its own hull from the East Coast through the Panama Canal up the coast. And he was coming up the coast to Washington. He was not intending to come into Washington because this person also had, he had a home up in Alaska. He was an avid sports fisherman. His intention was to take that boat directly up to Alaska and start using it for the fishing season. He had to stop, I believe it was in Naya Bay as he came through, because he was short of fuel. He came in there, my recollection was, one evening, I think it may have even been a Sunday evening, and he refueled. He intended to go in, refuel, and leave immediately to continue the trek up to Alaska to get fishing, sports fishing. He was not able to take fuel on. He was not able to fuel up at that time because there weren't adequate fuel supplies, so he was required by practicality to spend the night there. The next morning, the fuel truck arrived, and the fuel was loaded on his boat. He immediately took off for Alaska and continued on his journey. So I was brought in, and I was surprised that the assessment had come down, because my recollection was I hadn't really keyed in on the fact that transportation had not, the change in the use tax law of transportation finally ending. But it was clear in my mind that the boat became taxable because there was a first use. And in that situation, we had the boat stopping there because there was a practical necessity to refuel. There was no intention to stop there earlier, but there was a stop, and the boat continued on to British Columbia, or continued on to British Columbia and up to Alaska. So, you know, that was the Department of Revenue in the one case wants to recognize that as the first act within the state. Had transportation finally ended? No. Was it merely transitory? Under current standards, the way the Department of Revenue wants to change this, it could certainly be argued that it was transitory, that there shouldn't have been any taxation. But here we go. The Department of Revenue wants to change course midstream after we've got a clear statute. The Department of Revenue tried to make a change last session with the legislature, and that was withdrawn. Thirdly, we've got the regulation. We've got years and years and years of administrative practice. So, you know, the Department of Revenue can't have its cake and eat it, too. The other thing that I want to say is, you know, I think it was two years ago or last year when the change in the, I guess it was last year, when there was a change in the state tax law, and it was a change to expand the non-residency exemptions for boats in the state. Entity-owned boats could stay here longer, the same length of time that individually-owned boats could be, essentially 6 months a year, with permits being filed. And secondly, in the case of larger boats, typically the larger yachts up to 200 feet in length that can come in here and are used for a crewed charter, the Department of Revenue had previously taken the position, I believe incorrectly, but it was their position, that use tax, if not already paid on the boat, or sales tax, use tax would apply to the full fair market value. The Department of Revenue, by statute, with the legislature, changed the law to provide that in those instances with a crewed charter, that the tax would not apply to the full fair market value, but there would be a use tax component that applied to the owner of the boat on the lease revenue for the boat itself. That's in addition to any sales tax implications to the charter party who's using the boat. So that legislation passed. I believe it was the House where it passed unanimously. In the Senate, there was one vote against it or vice versa, and signed into law by the governor. That effort, that change in the law, came about because of a 10 to 12 year effort of, in part, the yachting industry. I don't remember if the aircraft industry was involved in it. I don't think it was, because I don't think that law applied to the aircraft. But the yachting industry had worked tirelessly to demonstrate to the Department of Revenue and the legislature that this is an industry that can create jobs. And I won't go into all the reasons that it can create jobs, spending, etc., and actually increase tax revenues. Because the practical matter is, these boats that come in here that would be picked up for taxation by failing to be exempt for whatever reason under prior law, those boats just stayed out of here. They didn't come into the state. Washington had a horrible reputation. So the legislature comes in, and the governor signs into law legislation that's intended to kickstart that industry here, and essentially it said, let's give it a chance and see what happens. Now, what do we have? We have that during that same session, the Department of Revenue pushing legislation, as Mr. Webster just indicated, that was to counter that with the use tax, which was to hurt people if they increased local use tax and the shifting of the use tax collections. And then we have this change in regulation coming through by an administrative agency and an administration that supported giving this industry a chance as it related predominantly to non-residents, and a legislature that had only one dissenting vote. So I object strenuously to this, and I've got clients who object strenuously as well. And I will be submitting my comments in writing, and I do hope the Department of Revenue takes another look at this. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments, Mr. Robinson. And we will certainly take a look at them in great detail and consider them.
Thank you.
Yes. And thank you for submitting them in writing as well. Next, we have Kevin Miller.
Well, hello. Good morning. I'm Kevin Miller. I represent myself. I'm a private pilot and aircraft owner. I'm going to offer a written feedback, so I'll send that in shortly before the end of the month. But I just wanted to join and summarize. I fully agree with Mr. Webster and Mr. Robinson and the comments they've had for largely similar reasons. I'd like to just make a few specific points. On the tractor and equipment case, with Mr. Robinson's comments, I agree. I think the constitutional issues discussed in there were a distraction, and that creates the argument that the state didn't obtain nexus for a Washington resident bringing property into the state. I actually don't believe that's what the department intends or wants, to create situations where a resident can argue that someone is not obtaining nexus doing that. So I would agree it's good lawyering but not good policy. It's also not a precedent-setting case. The points that I'm going to make in my written feedback, there's really three of them, and I'll just summarize each one. I disagree with the reasons that are cited in the CR 101 about this being existing and historic practice and existing department policy. I disagree with this strenuously. I'm going to read what one of DOR's own experts in the space has said. Quote, "We have no legal standing when referencing the RCWs and the WACs. In 2008, we had my first aircraft owner challenging the local rate. He refused to pay according to where he hangared his plane. He provided fuel receipts for a much lower local area. I looked for guidance and I talked to ITA. They informed me the law said first use as a consumer without regard for where it was hangared. The law rule did not say the same as the retail sales tax. If they could document first use as a consumer, then they will be allowed to use that local rate. We did not have legal backing to fight it." That's my first point. Second point is that the proposed language introduces new terminology regarding first taxable use and transitory de minimis use. This latter language, transitory de minimis, is not defined anywhere. It's not used in any court case. It is entirely new language that is introduced without definition. As Mr. Robinson said, the pre-1994 versions of RCW 8212-010 had defined an exception for articles of property in transit until such transit, quote, finally ended. But this language was repealed. And so, while language around transitory de minimis might have been good rulemaking pre-1994, with the removal of that, I just feel that this language is inappropriate in this language, or is in the rule, and certainly inappropriate without definition. It's creating a situation where the department has the opportunity to define it however they choose, and I disagree with that as a point of rulemaking. And then, you know, third and finally, regarding the underlying policy, I disagree with the policy. The department's, after extensive review of records from the department, the only determination that I can find that is on point for this is determination 05-0141. And the example that's shared in that determination is actually quite similar to the example that Mr. Robinson just provided. The department in that determination said, quote, "Under the presently applicable definition, the passage of the boat through Washington waters in May 2003 qualifies as taxable use because taxpayer clearly assumed possession, dominion, and control of the boat while it was within the state, stopping overnight at a undisclosed Washington location for rest and refueling." And the department then determined that as a result of that activity, that use tax was applicable at the local rate for that Washington location. I think that it's clear that the department is squirming here, trying to justify an idea of permanent moorage as the sourcing for use tax. When the department was drafting this revised rule that was now published in the CR101, the first draft of this rule going back to May actually had language in it around permanent moorage, which was similar to the language that was attempted to be included in Substitute Senate Bill 5251. Of course, the legislatures removed that language on the floor, and so I think the legislative intent around 8212-010 is quite clear. But going back to the first draft of the rule that the department had in May, that initial draft had language around permanent moorage. When internal DOR experts reviewed that rule, they commented on it, saying, "I don't think this is correct. I believe that the use tax rate is based on first use per WAC 458-20-178, Section 5A, and RCW 8232-730, Section 10. Even if we are trying to change the interpretation of first use, this phrasing still has the same meaning. I agree with Adam, who is another commenter. I agree with Adam that all of the examples below conflict with the first use logic. So again, I agree with Mr. Webster and Mr. Robinson. I believe that this policy, as expressed in this proposed language, is against the plain reading of RCW 8212. So I believe that that alternative language that mirrors the plain reading should be used. And that will conclude my comment. I'll submit written feedback.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Appreciate it.
Those are the only three people who had initially said that they wanted to make public comments. So I guess at this time, if anyone else wants to make a public comment, please identify yourself.
All right, it does not sound like there will be any further comments. I just want to say before we conclude this that the department does greatly appreciate the attendance and also the comments that you've provided orally, as well as the comments that everybody intends to provide in writing. It does help us to understand the different perspectives, to consider things that maybe we hadn't considered when we initially drafted the rule. And so, you know, we will certainly not only take the comments into consideration, but reply to the comments so that there is a mutual understanding and exchange, I guess, of communication on these issues before we proceed with the rulemaking activity. So it looks like, Fred, you've got your hand up. So,
yes, I do.
Go
thanks,
ahead.
Fred.
Go ahead.
Yeah, this is a question for you and for Kevin Miller. Kevin, I'm not familiar with that internal statement from the Department of Revenue indicating that we don't have the authority to do this. I'm just thinking, what's the easiest way for me to get that? And perhaps that will be filed. What's the easiest way for me to get that?
Fred, I was just looking up your website. I'll be dropping you an email now.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Fred.
Yeah, of course. So is there any further comments or questions before we close? Okay, perfect. Thanks again, everybody, for participating. And like I said, once the comment period ends, we will respond to those comments, take them into consideration, and then at that point, the next step will either be a Form CR-102 filing in a hearing, or the other possibility is that there may be another public meeting, or that rulemaking activities may end. So those are the next three plausible steps, depending on where we go based on the comments received. And so the time now, for purposes of the record, is 11:13 a.m., and the public meeting for Rule 145 is now adjourned.